Good evening, everybody. Good afternoon, good evening, good morning. This is the Fakeologist Show. I'm just going to start off real briefly because today we are the guest. I'm the guest on Reality Skeptic Show. So we're going to have probably less clips, less regular show topics, and you're just going to sit back and listen to Reality Skeptic, who hails from Poland. He's going to interview me now. And so sit back and relax. And maybe after the broadcast, I'll wrap this up and just give a few details on what I've been doing for the weekend. So without further ado, we'll pod this down and we will talk to Reality Skeptic. Hello, Reality.
Hello. So I'm in 5 seconds, I'm starting recording on my end. So.
All right.
I will make a short improvised introduction and then sure. We go. So here we go.
Nice.
Welcome everybody to this Reality Skeptic podcast episode number 3. Today, my guest is coming from Toronto, Canada, the Fakeologist himself, a man who I respect very much his work, and fakeologist.com is the site, and Fakeotube, the platform, his own platform, when he puts all the videos that should help everybody to wake up to the media fakery around the world. So welcome officially to the podcast.
Thank you, Luke. Is it Luke or Reality Skeptic? Sorry, I just...
You can say whatever you want. My English version of my Polish name is Luke, so
okay.
That's what I use. Yeah, so I can call you Tim if that's okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
I know you also used another name, so everybody, well, this is Fakeologist Tim.
Yeah.
So, how are you today? How's the weather in Canada?
Thanks for asking. It's pretty good, pretty warm. It's about let's say 5 Celsius, which for those American Yankees that are my biggest audience, I'm going to say that's in the 40s. Actually, let's see now. It's about 5 out with the sun. So the sun is warm. It's brilliant. So today is winter tire changeover day. So we got the winter tires going on.
Yeah, it's appropriate because in Poland today, the first day this winter season when it really started snowing. So I immediately thought, like, oh yeah, I'm going to talk to Canadians, so it must be snowing. So,
no, not yet. Not we're pretty far. Toronto is farther south than at least 6 northern United States.
Yeah.
So, Toronto is quite a bit below the 49th
but
parallel.
You do have severe weather sometimes in the winter, right? Or not so much.
I would say we have less than 10 snow days. A snow day is when we have maybe 3 or 4 centimeters, a couple inches of snow. That's just enough to create havoc in Toronto, which is the biggest city in Canada. And there's already gridlock traffic, but you sprinkle some snow out there and everything slows right down. I call them snow days, snow events, but no, it's pretty okay. I can deal with it.
So. And that's good. I know that in central and northern part of Canada that it gets really ugly in the winter, but okay.
No, it just depends where. There's the wet coast, which is warm, and there's the east coast, which is a little colder, and there's the prairies, which are cold, very cold, minus 20 to minus 40 on some days, which I could not. I just couldn't stand those kind of days. That would be beyond. It's beyond cold. But whereabouts are you in Poland? If I can
the more northwestern part. I think the biggest city that I'm in a small town, but the biggest city around me is Gdańsk.
Well, Gdańsk, yeah, that's where Lech Walesa is from.
Who?
Lech Walesa.
Lech Walesa. Yeah.
Sorry, my Polish accent's not what it used to be.
That fraud Lech Wałęsa, yeah.
He was the most famous Pole for at least 10 years worldwide, I would say. He was more famous than your president or crime sinister. What was his name?
the premier is Morawiecki, I think, right now, but the Andrzej Duda is the current president. So
yeah, you had a general. It began with a P. It was something like General Podborski or something, who was the president of Poland, and he was the one that was. He looked like a Soviet minister. I can't remember his last name anymore.
There is a long history of this Soviet thing, but Canada is become, or maybe it always was like a Soviet state, wasn't it? Like, you remember watching videos from Canada during the coronavirus hoax, and it was like, it was more Soviet than what happened here in Central Europe. So how was the last 3 years for you?
Well, yeah, I would say Canadians are real order followers. They love to follow. We love government. I think our Canadian motto is, it's something and good government. I can't remember the first part right off the top of my head. So we follow the government. So when the government says jump, Canadians say how high. But we don't have any. Don't forget that we went along with the motherland when our cousins to the south broke away and fought the king, allegedly, and fought him because he was trying to impose a tea tax. But Canadians, we wanted to stay with Mama England. So we do what she says, or he says now.
What do you make about of the situation that we have in the world today? Do you think that every country is, governed by the same small group of people or entities, or do you think there are still maybe some sovereign separate countries? Do you think it's a one world system already for many years? How do you view
it? I think it's been a one world system for at least 100 or 200 years. It's getting more and more obvious as time goes by. It's a Fabian gradual approach. It doesn't just happen overnight that, oh, we're in a one world government. No, it's been going on for a long time. It really accelerated in the 1990s, when they try and figure out a way to link all the countries, and they use climate, because it's pretty hard to argue about taking care of Mother Earth. So most people agreed to it, even though it was totally toothless. It was just an agreement where, yeah, let's just take care of Earth. And as long as we don't have any new taxes or new rules, we can all just agree, hey, that's a great idea. Let's just sign here. I don't have to do anything. Great. But gradually they're starting to impose rules and regulations that have to have some kind of teeth or sharpness to them. Mm-hmm. And that is happening now worldwide. And it's a very Fabian socialist, which means very gradual method of, so you don't feel it happening all at once. So it happens a little bit to this generation, and then another 20 years, the next generation, they'll tighten it up a bit. We have a whole generation that really believes that man is hurting Earth and changing Earth. And even though it's a lie, the people that don't believe it are just going to die off. And the young people who that's all they've heard of, they're going to believe it. But that's how it works, I think.
Last time I spoke to Fake Nuke Phil, and I know he's a regular guest on your show.
Yes, I love Fake Nuke Phil.
He said that World War II was the last moments that some opposition to this one world system in Germany took place, and maybe in Japan also. So yeah. What do you make of that?
Well, I think there's a lot more. I know Phil likes Germany. He likes Hitler. There are many people that think that Hitler really was fighting for the people of Germany. And maybe at some point he might have been doing it for a brief period of time. But I think there's a lot more to who Hitler was, where he came from, who was behind him. I don't think it's all that simple. Now, Japan, I haven't really studied. Japan, of course, is now fully integrated into the world system. I would say it's an occupied country. The United States occupies Japan and Germany to this day. So they do as they're told. Maybe Japan was a little less in line back in World War II. I'm not too sure. But Germany, I think, was quite I think it was being manipulated and orchestrated in a way that Phil might not agree with. You might think that Hitler was this fantastic nationalist that really was there for Germany, and he could well have been for a period of time, but obviously we see what happened, that they weren't going to let that happen for very long. So I think nationalism can flare up, but they just, the globalists, the people that rule the world, they'll put that out really fast. That's not going to last.
Yeah, and I also remember that you had a show on, you had two guests on your show that were arguing whether Jesuits or Jews are running the whole thing. I remember some strange show like that. So what do you make about this whole debate that who is running, whether it's the Jewish bankers or the Jesuits?
I don't think either of them are running it. I really am starting. I'm never satisfied with anyone's conclusion. And when anyone is so sure about something, that makes me less sure about something. So I'm really, next week I'll be interviewing Joseph Atwell, who has website called Caesar's Messiah. And
yeah, I know, yeah.
I posted his interview with Higher Side Chats, and it was fantastic because he thinks that there's a whole Kabbalistic, Masonic power structure, and there's way more Masons than there are Jews in this world. So there's a lot of overlap in the people that rule over us, I think. Overlap. And
I don't think also that you can say that any one particular group that we can name is running the whole place. I also sometimes go into the so-called supernatural woo-woo land for some. Mm-hmm. Maybe something, you know, more strange that's going on. I had a guest in my first show who was talking about, you know, the demiurgic entity and stuff like that. There is something, I mean, I have...
What kind of entity?
Demiurge, you know, the Gnostic idea of the fake God running this place.
So, well, I don't think so. I think it's humans. I'm not into, I don't buy into stuff that I can't see or really see evidence for. I'm not...
That's the problem, because
I'm too practical.
Doesn't have any paranormal, supernatural, out-of-body experiences, then you know, that's sort of...
I'm still waiting for mine.
Yeah, I had some that I cannot explain, but I also am very skeptical about my own experiences, so I'm not making any conclusions about them. Just saying that there is also this idea that there is something that we cannot see and understand, you know, so I'm skeptical about everything, so hence the name of the show. But I also wanted to ask you how it started for you to this idea to make your own platform and to do what you do. Was there any particular situation in your life? I know that you said on one of your shows that at one point of your life your wife was more awake than you. So
She was when it came to the medical system. She was way more not trusting of them. Maybe she had witnessed or had her own experiences before I showed up in her life, although I've known her longer than she hasn't known me at this point. But I've always been into computers. I've always been into the media as far as I can remember things. And I just married the two together, computers and interest in mainstream media. Mm-hmm. And I was a blogger before I started Fakeologist. I had the Right On blog, where I just looked at the world through a right-wing perspective, because I'm a traditionalist. And I believe the way we used to do things is better than how we do things now socially. And so I would just put out my commentary on my own blog, because I saw the power of the media, the power of the internet, and I wanted to put my own site out there and get my own views out there. Now, of course, the same old problem everyone else has: how the heck do you get people to see what you're doing? It's very hard, because we have an infinite number of websites. And how do you get people to your website? So that was a very difficult thing to get seen. And so I put as much content as I could, and I made sure the search engines came to my site. So if people type certain words, they might actually get to my website. But I've been doing that for a long time. And then in 2012, there was a certain thing that happened with taxes. And then I just started going to the internet and looking into it. And next thing I know, I'm falling down a huge rabbit hole and finding out that all my preconceived notions about the media and what was going on were wrong, or there was another way of looking at it. And it was stunning to me. And I haven't stopped looking since. So we've been doing this for about 11 years, and I'm still finding out new stuff, which is really exciting, actually.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons that I tried to, you know, start a podcast to learn from the people who have more experience and, you know, more knowledge than I am. But I have to ask you, if you, with your platform, do you try to wake up people? Do you try to, you know, talk to your family or friends or neighbors or people that you work with or meet? Do you have this, you know, what some called truthers have, this idea that we can wake the masses? Do you have this idea, or did you ever had it?
Well, I'm always interested in making my message simple so people can figure it out with the clues I give. I really want to give people the tools and show them what I'm finding out. And if they're interested, then they can talk to me and in my various platforms. But I'm pretty sure that I can't bang someone over the head and convince them. They have to figure it out for themselves. As for the family and friends, I'm just not going to agree with any of the commentary they give on the mainstream media. So I will give a very dissenting or contrary view. And if they want to follow up, I'll let them. A lot of the times they just roll their eyes and said, no, I'm not talking about it like this. And that'll be the end of it. Because unfortunately now I have a reputation in the family that, you're just always so contrary and we can't talk to you. Because
I have it the same right now, and with my family and even so-called friends, you know, they always look at me different when I say, "Oh, this is fake, that is fake," and it's difficult sometimes. Yeah, but that's what it is. The most of the world is brainwashed. Well, we all have been brainwashed.
So oh yeah,
it is what it is. But I wanted to ask you also, how much do you think that what is shown in the media? You know, sometimes people, my friend asked me, do you think, oh, it's fake, nobody ever dies? He always does confrontational, like this, you know, trying to argue that it's not possible to fake everything. If somebody approaches you with that kind of question, what would you say to that?
Well, I just say everything is fake until proven real when it comes to the mainstream media. That's their job, is to present fake information, misleading information, and push agendas. I say lots of real stuff does happen, but you just don't hear about it because it's just not controllable. The media is not going to put out a story that they can't control the inputs and the outputs. They need to get a lot of energy from the stories, and if they don't control the stories, then they can't control the outcomes, so they're not going to promote them. So if, for instance, if somebody gets killed in a car accident, number one, you're not going to hear the names for days because it takes time to let the next of kin know. And then maybe when they do find out, the next of kin will say, no, I don't want this to be public. So they can tell the media to screw off and not broadcast any details, and whether or not the media would listen. So if there is an agenda for, say, a car crash that the media is trying to push, they can't really push it if they don't get any cooperation from family members, who most people don't want to talk to the media. Most people are very private. They don't even want anything to do with being public. So that doesn't suit a media who is trying to push different agendas. They need the whole story from the beginning right to the end with an outcome, and preferably all wrapped up in 48 hours, because they know that the audience is not waiting for the whole story if it takes too long, because we all know that most people have very low attention spans, mainly because everything is solved in about 22 minutes on the TV. So after that, people forget. So for sure, almost everything in the mainstream media, put on the front page of any paper, internet page, radio station, TV, is most likely a phony story.
Yeah, and the last like 3.5 years, maybe, or even 4, was it even shocking for you that how easy it was for the media and all the corrupt politicians to put everybody in a mask and tell them that there's this deadly virus, which obviously is fake. I don't believe in this contagion, you know, stuff. So was it shocking to you, or did you, you know?
No, I knew we were going to have a problem when this first started. I just said, here we go. This is going to take a while. And just the absolute worldwide coordination was quite awesome to witness. But I figured quite quickly this is going to take a while to work its way through. I predicted about 10 years actually at the time, and for the most part I didn't know what was going to happen, but I did say to myself that I'm ready for any kind of big changes. I'm ready to do whatever it takes. I think this is a big one, but as far as people going along with it, not really, because I know how easy it is from my 9/11 research to fool the whole world. And I knew that even though I think I've got the best research on 9/11, I promote the best researchers, they don't get any promotion even 10 years later. So I knew that even if you know what's going on, no one's going to listen to you if it doesn't fit their worldview and it doesn't fit the propaganda out there. And it's very hard to compete with billions or trillions of dollars worth of propaganda with your one website and one idea that might not fit, definitely doesn't fit the narrative. So I'm not surprised. I wasn't surprised. I knew that eventually there's going to be some pushback, especially if they do end up really killing people, which I do think they are definitely hurting people.
With the vaccines, right?
Yes, I really do. But I think they've always hurt people with vaccines. It's just they've never had a worldwide mass vaccination like this before with this kind of coordination, because they've never had the technology to send out a unified message instantly worldwide. This is just thanks to technology that they've been able to coordinate so well.
So, do you know somebody who has issues due to vaccine, and are you 100%? Can you say that you are 100% sure that is because of the vaccine?
Well, yeah, my daughter is a type 1 diabetic, and I'm absolutely positive based on my research that it's caused by childhood vaccination. I have no doubt. I think autism is definitely caused by childhood vaccination. I think all vaccines cause paralysis, and then the paralysis is manifest in many, many different what we call diseases. When you paralyze or poison or kill certain organs or nerve endings in the body, it manifests in so many different ways. It's unbelievable actually what kind of damage it does. So I'm quite positive about that, and even my neighbor who published her whole travels with the COVID vaccine online in a public way, she died this year from cancer treatments, which we all know that cancer treatments are 98% effective at killing people.
How old was
your sister? She was in her 20s. So that was the worst example, and my dentist was had some paralysis issues after he took the vaccine, a younger guy. So there were three things that were, for me, I don't know that many people, but there were at least three people that I am positive were directly affected by vaccine. And of course, even today, I'm hearing people that I'm aware of that are dying in their 50s. And of course, you could just say, oh, there's so many there's so many factors. Yeah, of course there's so many factors, but we now people, it's just easier for me to explain it with the vaccine. And I know I can suffer from confirmation bias where you're just looking for a problem and then you'll find it and you're using that to fit your narrative. But I'm pretty convinced, just because I've spent a lot of time researching health and wellness and what really makes us sick, because I think that's another, I think the official stories we're given are, have been fake for 100 years or 200 years. And in doing my research, I'm pretty convinced that just toxins and poisons are what makes us sick, as opposed to this concept of contagion, which I don't believe in pathogenic material, and I don't believe in contagion. So there's two things that are not discussed by anyone for the most part, and they're the only things that matter when it comes to health and wellness. So, yeah, I'm reminded daily with my daughter and who has type 1 diabetes. And unfortunately, I'm reminded by the hour of her condition. With technology, I can look her up, which is extremely invasive private to her privacy. But it's for me, it's a constant reminder, and because I know her whole health record, because I've, as her father, was responsible for getting her all those vaccines plus extra ones, and it makes sense to me now with my research what the cause is. And of course it's a lifelong sentence that she's got now. So
yeah, sorry to hear that. I must say that when I liked to do experiment on myself, and I remember when I tried different diets and different things, and I also did abuse alcohol earlier in my 20s, and I remember when I stopped getting sick, when I started to eat, healthy and stop poisoning myself. So there's plenty of poison in food, and obviously I think that of all pharmaceutical drugs are contain poisons. So
well, yeah,
poison. So
poison is the only way you can make your body react. They have to poison you. So if you want to jolt your body, it's like steering a big object. You have to really smash it to move it into another direction. And that's sort of what drugs do. They send your body in another direction, and they don't really cure it. You're just sort of trying to disrupt the bodily function so it stops doing what you don't want it to do. That's what drugs do. They're all toxic. The poison is always in the dose. So all drugs are lethal. It's just the amount that causes the lethality, and they are very careful to measure how much you get before it actually kills you. So
yeah, the human body seems to have mechanisms to heal itself.
Yeah.
So do you think that people who claim that there is nothing in the vaccine, like your friend, I think Tim Osman, who has a show, you think he's being too dismissive about the vaccines and that they can hurt people?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I do think he's not right on that, but he's entitled to his own opinion. I don't know if he researches it as much as I do. I think when you have firsthand people around you that are directly affected, it changes your perspective quite a bit. Now, I can't prove anything I'm saying, but I'm just, as I always do, gathering what I think is some of the better research and putting it all together. And I usually publish it on my blog because I think the existing healthcare system is mostly fake. So that's why I fit it into Fakeologist. I know vaccines are not really a Fakeologist topic, but because it's so important that anytime I catch somebody in the mainstream trying to explain something one way to fit their model, I like to use my model to explain it a little better, because sometimes they're trying to force their model with evidence that doesn't support it, but I find my model of how vaccines work actually explains quite a bit more. So
yeah, but there is also, of course, lots of controlled opposition, so-called people who are making this anti-vax topic, you know, go in a certain direction. So that's all, that's also the problem. So, you know, you have people who, you know, have corrupt politicians who claim that maybe vaccines are good, but this vaccine is different. And so you have people who obviously act in front of camera, overacting their injuries, maybe. So it's a mess, you know, in the internet.
It's a big psyop. It's very large. It's the biggest psychological operation ever in the history of the world, which is another reason why I talk about it. It's very large. There's so much money behind it. There's so much coordination. It's awesome, and I just can only chip away at their model a little bit. But it's not going away because it is the template that they need for global domination. This whole biosecurity state is just extremely, this is crucial for them to convince people to submit to this digital biosecurity system that they want to put on top of the whole world. So it's very important to understand it.
Do you think that this is what's the end goal is of this whole corona hoax, this scandemic? To you know, to monitor people more and to have this, as you say, this new program of you know, so-called biosecurity or whatever you want to name it. You think that there is another goal of this, or there is just, you know, further totalitarian, you know, system?
Well, no, they want complete control over all resources in the world. And they want to tell everyone how to live, where to live, and what resources to consume. They think they have the technology now to track and trace every single resource and manage it centrally. That is the goal. They think they have enough computing power to literally tag and inventorize everything on Earth, from water to trees to dirt to sand, you name it. They want to control everything. And you cannot have capitalists running around saying, okay, I'm going to dig this hole here and move this dirt there, because they're going to say, well, that affects the guy down the street. We just need total control over all resources. And that is such an anathema to the way we've been doing things up until now. So they really need a biosecurity state to just really limit where people go, what they do, how much they have, how much resource they have. I mean it's a really awesome potential project they're trying to do. I'm not convinced it'll work, because I think people are extremely resistant to being controlled. There's a good chunk of many countries that are fine with control, and they love it when someone tells them what to do, where to go. But I think there's too many people in the world that, unless they get a really good deal out of it, they're not going to go along with it. And I think a lot of the people that had money now, or had money in the past and now, they're not part of the new plan. So they're going to fight back. They're going to fight back. So how this works in the future is it's going to be very interesting to see who fights back, and how it all sorts out, because nothing is a done deal yet.
I like your optimism. I don't know if I would be such optimistic after what I saw last few years, but don't you think that more doctors should be speaking out, or do you think it is easy to pay and threaten people to the point that they don't want to speak? Or maybe people are just speaking in private about this, because I found very few. I expected more, a little bit more, you know, medical professionals who would speak about, you know, this fake pandemic and vaccines and stuff like that. Maybe there are some people more awake than I think, but I haven't seen enough, you know.
I think the only people that would speak out are people at the end of their career that that have nothing to lose. I think people that are plugged into the system, they're not going to speak out because there is not enough. There's not enough support of the average person because the average person doesn't understand. So there's no way a doctor who has a multi-million dollar business is going to speak out just to go along with the 1% of the people that think there's a problem, but they all disagree on what the problem is. They know there's a problem, so there's no upside for anyone plugged into the system to break away from it, unless they had an alternative system to support themselves. Doctors are all multi-million dollar businesses. They have so much invested, they're not going to walk away from it. So there's just no way that I'm sure many doctors can speak privately amongst the ones they know are not informants, but there's no way they can, unless your friend is your best friend is a doctor, he's never going to confide in the average person and go against the system. Because just like me on the outside, I'm observing this, a doctor on the inside is observing the coordination and the control. There's no way he's going to go against it. So the thing that keeps him in line is his own self-interest. There's nothing more powerful than someone's self-interest to keep someone in between the lines. I mean, why do we drive down the highway and stay between the lines? Why don't we just floor it and start driving in between cars? Because we know that it'll end badly. That's otherwise it'd be a lot of fun to take your high-speed car. You know, there's always one guy out of maybe 1,000 that drives like that. I saw one today. But for the most part, that's why we stay between the lines on a highway. We know bad things are going to happen eventually if we keep doing it.
Yeah, I remember when I talked to Phil, he mentioned that he was shocked when the Las Vegas fake shooting happened, that so many police officers and, you know, firemen and doctors were, at least that's what he said, there had to be on the scam, you know. And obviously they were, because, you know, we have to have coordination between, you know, policemen and you know, the hospitals to pull a hoax like that in a you know, huge city like Las Vegas. So, you know, and there have been obviously multiple fake shootings in the United States. So obviously, you know, I was shocked when I found how many, you know, of them were happening. And obviously I haven't found any that would be real. So yeah, the level of coordination, it's a little bit, you know, sometimes it's a little bit scary and shocking, you know, how far things have gone.
Well, you only need certain people that handle these things. You don't need the whole police force to do it. And like I said, because everyone is self-interested, if you're not in, say you weren't made aware of the Las Vegas plan, on the force, it's going to be, you're going to probably ask around and you probably won't find too many in the force that know what's going on. It might be called a special project. And there are certain divisions within any military operation, like the police force, that handle the special projects. Now, the guy at the top does have to know. There's no doubt the chief knows. If the chief doesn't know, then he's not going to stay the chief for very long. But the average rank and file, I don't think, knows half the time what's going on. And if he asks, he might just be told that it's a special operation. That's, what else do you have to tell him? It's none of your business. So just, you know, get in your car and do your job and go home. And if we need you, we'll call you. It's the same in any business. You know, I work for many businesses. I wouldn't know if the company's about to go bankrupt until the day I went there and the door's locked. Nobody tells anyone in any organization what's going on if they don't need to know. I think anyone who works at any business knows that unless you run the place, you don't know what's going on until the very last minute, until it's too late.
Oh, yeah.
So police force is a military operation. It's run like the army, so it's all compartmentalized. It's not really hard to keep people secret, but it's very difficult to go against even a police force when you're in the police force. You're going to have problems.
And there's also the problem that people have been, you know, made this way, that they, you know, everybody wants to have, you know, their, you know, home and car and buy new shiny things. And
yeah,
I think people have been, you know, too far removed from the nature, so to speak. And you know, there's even the people working in the police who might know that something is happening, you know, they have a good pay and the bonuses and they, you know, they won't risk it, you know, so... I also wanted to go back to one thing. I noted my in my notes here that one thing that is controversial about 9/11, and people always argue about the jumpers, you know, the so-called jumpers.
Yeah.
Do you think, as I don't remember whether it was Phil or I heard it on Tim Osman's show, that you can easily pull that with mannequins and automatic cannons. What do you think about this topic of jumpers from the buildings of 9/11?
Well, the jumpers wasn't the biggest deal in the world to me in my research, but we did have someone come to the Fakeologist audio chat that made a big deal about it. But there, for me, my opinion, 3 weeks after I started looking into 9/11, was the whole thing was a complete and utter psychological operation, integrated capstone event, and everything we saw on the tele-live vision was manufactured like a movie. So there were only jumpers in the movie version of 9/11, and they didn't release that part of the movie till I think sometime after 9/11. It came after the only thing
didn't show it right the day it was happening. There was no TV showing any jumpers, right?
I don't think so. I wasn't watching TV that day. I was in an office and we didn't have a TV in the office, and the internet, you couldn't even get to the main media websites because they were all under so much traffic pressure. You couldn't even load a website on the main media. For instance, CNN, I think, was in text only. There's no way you could stream a video in 2001. I used to have access to the internet in 2001 at work, and I used to read the internet in between things that I was doing, and definitely there was no video, and all the websites that could tell you what's going on were just smashed with traffic. They couldn't serve up the web pages, I don't think. So I actually called my wife and told her to turn on the TV and tell me what she watched. So she watched all day at home with our baby, but I didn't get to see any of it. I turned the radio on and I got the audio version. I think I might have done that in the office if I had a radio. I don't really remember because it would have been good if I could get to my car and listen to the radio, but it just didn't happen. So, from what I understand, the only thing that was shown on 9/11 was the constant looping of the plane hitting the building. And that's just important for creating a lasting burning impression in people's minds. You just repeat the same video 30 seconds, 15 seconds, 1,000 times. And that's what they did. So that's why people think they saw a plane that day. Yeah, you saw a plane on TV, all right, and you can't get that out of your mind. And even if you were there, you weren't going to go, you were going to run to your TV because you couldn't get near the buildings. And if you know anything about big cities, unless you are in a certain position, you can't see anything. You'd have to be high up in another building to look high up towards another building. So everyone was watching the TV. That was the whole point of it.
Yeah, I have a friend who, when I told him there was no planes on 9/11, he angrily responded that he saw a plane on TV and like.
Yeah, of course he did.
Yeah, that was funny.
But the jumpers are, to me, they weren't a big deal. I know it was very dramatic, but. Most of the footage, I think we picked it apart on various web forums, and there are just many different problems with it, with the footage. So I know it's very gruesome and dramatic and makes a big impression on people. But if you really think it through, there's almost no way anyone would jump from a tower to certain death. Now, I don't even know if you would jump out of a second story window to the ground. Most people would be very hesitant. But when you get to the 90th floor of a building, there's no way you would choose certain death. You would probably just struggle and crawl on the ground and take your chances way up there that something could rescue. But there, nobody chooses certain death, I don't think. You have to be extremely suicidal.
That's a very good point, because I know even that to add to what you said, that a few people that I know have they are scared of heights, you know. So that if you add that, that people are sometimes naturally, you know, afraid if you are very high, and it's not going to be your cold reaction to jump, you know, from.
I just went to the 30th story of the Gatlinburg Tower, which is an old observation tower in Tennessee. And I noticed that the wall, the edge of the platform was quite low. It was only about 5 feet. And the wind was blowing, and I didn't even want to go too close to the edge. And it's a 5 feet wall, because I'm not afraid of heights, but I also don't go up there to that height that often. It was 30 stories tall. There's no way in the world I would jump off that thing. I would find any other way to get down. It was 30 floors is extremely high. So can you imagine three times that, 90 floors up? Yeah, your head's in the clouds. You can't even see the ground. So no, I just don't think it would happen.
That it wouldn't be a natural reaction. You're right. Yeah. And speaking of fake planes, didn't I remember correctly that some few weeks ago you had someone on your show who agreed that there were no planes, but he actually tried to convince you or argue that actually somebody died in those towers. He got mad that you told that nobody died. I don't remember correctly, but was there some guy on your show who has his own show that was, you know, claiming there were no planes, but still people died? Well, I don't remember correctly.
Maybe. Most people can't believe that nobody died. This is a topic that really doesn't get discussed. And the Clues Forum has done a good job of explaining why they got suspicious about the whole list of victims, because they saw many problems in the CNN memorial, which is kind of strange why a news outlet would be the place to create a memorial right away for the victims. And they found anomalies in the way the web pages were created that indicated that there was some kind of automated process to create characters that they say were victims. So that's when they got suspicious. They saw the anomalies. They created this thing called the Vixim Report. You just go to fake11.com/Vixim. You can get a copy of that report. It's about 90 pages. Just read it. And this is something that just never gets talked about because people are too busy talking about the towers and what happened, and they get bogged down in the wrong topics.
Don't you think there is also this emotional, people get emotionally triggered? I think they are very emotionally and in a very deep subconscious way tied to this whole, you know, narrative that people die and that the mm-hmm. death is, you know, this tragedy, and they get defensive about it. You know, there's this all those emotional triggers, you know, happening at the same time.
Well, that's the whole point of psychological operations. They promote the emotional part and they ignore the logical part. Now, the emotional, most women are attracted to emotional aspects of any situation. And when women get emotional, there's no logic in their arguments, because they're arguing from an emotional point of view, and it's usually a state of fear. So you cannot make good arguments and good thought decisions when you are in a state of fear, in an emotional state of fear. So those are the aspects of all psyops that are promoted. They're never going to fill in the details. In the extent, they're always going to show somebody crying or just discussing emotional aspects of the whole story. And they might give a little bit of fact, a little bit of logic, but they'll always gloss over it and go right to somebody crying or screaming. And there's just no logic to the story, and they don't have to promote it because they know that they'll have to build a much stronger story if someone is just going to concentrate on the logic. So they just leave out all the details, because if there are no details, you can't really argue with them. But you can, if they just show emotion for the whole time, then you're going to be so distracted with your feelings that you won't be thinking clearly about what actually happened. So that's how they do all psychological operations.
Yeah. And speaking of, you know, modern fake operations like the Gaza, you know, fake war, and what's happened in the Ukraine.
Yeah.
You know, Russia. I find in Poland, at least, there are obviously some channels who are so-called alternative, and you can clearly say that they are, you know, I mean, that's what I suspect. They're paid to tell those, you know, alternative lies. But I see many, you know, smaller channels who are just people who are think they are speaking the truth and think they are doing, you know, research, but they are also lost in this, you know, they think they are against the mainstream media, but they are actually, you know, caught in other, you know, like Russia is the good guy, or people are dying, but not on this side, the other side. You know, do you think, how much would you think that is, it is just people being gullible, or how much is there controlled, you know, the so-called control opposition in all those BitChute channels, Odyssey channels? You know, how much do you think it's, you know, agents of the system, and how people are just sometimes, you know, naive, just how would you...
Well, I think there are enough thought leaders, paid thought leaders, to put out stories where others can just pick up on them. So when someone doesn't believe the main story, they'll look for another story that makes sense to them, and they could pick it up. But they will always be given the ideas from the controllers. The controllers will give both sides of the story. They create the dialectic. They put out both sides, and I think there's lots of just average people that are doubters that don't realize that both sides are controlled, and they'll pick up on it, and they'll run with it, and they'll have their audiences, and they'll do well, because I'm always looking at the third side. So if you say it's the Jews, the other guy says it's the Jesuits, I'm looking for the other side, the third side, because it's probably the more likely side that's not promoted, that is really orchestrating the whole thing. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm always pretty, I like to say I'm pretty uncertain. I'm never sure of the truth, and I'm always looking for the truth. So if I'm always looking and I don't sell it to you as the truth, then I think that's a better, more honest position to be in, because of course I don't have the plans. I don't know who's running it and how they're doing it and what the dialectic of the day is. So I'm always chasing it down and just trying to make the most logical conclusion with the limited resources that I have. But I will never say I'm positive this is what happens, but I'll just say that there's no real evidence for this side. There's even less evidence for that side. So I will remain a skeptic and stay skeptical until further notice, and it's just a better place to be.
Yes, exactly. And people think, most even people who are think they are pursuing truth don't realize how much the real mannequins can very close to human looking mannequins can be used also in this war footage. And of course, AI generated images, and I don't think people give too much much thought and attention to the idea that it can be, you know, fake with all this you know, technology that we have, you know. So that's also the problem.
Yeah, the movie making technology has always been really advanced, and they are applying it to create the media, to create the news, so-called news, all the time. So it's always been pretty good. Most of us enjoy movies. I know a lot of movies have moved into the digital world, so everything is created on the computer now, and it's getting more and more lifelike. The video games are more and more lifelike. I don't play video games. I just know that because of the graphics, it's a lot easier to simulate reality. As time goes by, it'll just get better and better. It'll be really very blurry between reality and digital. But the old-fashioned ways to create movie making still work. They're slower, they're more expensive, but as things slide into the digital world with AI, where the computer just creates on command, it's going to be harder and harder to sort out what's real and what's not. I mean, it's quite awesome what's happening right now. But as long as you're aware that it can happen, then you can easily just be skeptical and not fall for it, really. If you've never heard of the idea that they're manufacturing stories, then you're going to fall for it. But if you know, as a fakeologist, that almost every single story is created out of whole cloth, then when one comes along, you're going to be on guard for it. I was on guard for something big to happen like COVID, never predicted it. But when this story came out, I dismissed it immediately. I had no idea about the size, the scope, and the coordination, but I was ready for one, just based on my own research. I was kind of on the fence about vaccines before. Mm-hmm. Maybe during that year, I was kind of on the fence about it. I even took a tetanus shot that year, which because I was on the fence and I was in a weak point. I took it and I was really sick for the first time within 3 weeks. I was literally on the floor. So that proves that I hadn't really done good conclusive research on vaccines at that point. But once they started pushing hard and emphasizing the COVID shot and really started to make a big deal, then I was really trying to figure out what's going on, because I knew for sure I wasn't going to take it, but I wanted to get some evidence that my position was correct. So they pushed me and many other people to research it because they made such a big deal about it.
Yeah. Do you think that we are going to have another, fake pandemic, or maybe you think there's something different coming up next? Maybe they will obviously milk the war topic and, the Gaza stuff. But do you think that something big is happening, or are we going to have small events here and there, and maybe then something, fake nuclear attack or something like that? What do you think is coming?
I really don't have a clue what's coming. I think they're going to keep pushing the whole vaccine virus back and forth. I think there's always the danger that you're going to lose your audience if you're too pushy about it. And I think they already have lost a lot of the audience in a lot of countries. So I'm not sure if they will be as successful with another round. But as for the nuclear thing, I'm not sure that they promoted the idea of nuclear enough to make people fearful of it. I'm pretty hopeful about how the young people, the younger generation is really just not interested in this whole Israeli 9/11 idea that they're trying to create. I don't think it's working either, and they're just pushing back just because they can see who is the oppressed and who's the oppressor. They don't care or necessarily believe the official Israeli 9/11 story they're trying to create, this 10/7 concept. I don't think it's working, and they just haven't, they didn't really create any visual evidence, which I think was a big mistake. And it was definitely the success of 9/11, just what I said, the constant plane flying into the side of the building looped a million times on 1 or 2 days, or maybe for the whole week. They haven't created the visual evidence that's burned into people's heads with the 10/7 event. So I'm not sure we have the best people running these operations right now, because they're not convincing their audience. But I think the vaccine virus audience is slowly dying off anyway. I think the baby boomers are just dying naturally, or not, or maybe accelerated with the vaccine, but they're going away anyway. So the mainstream media people, believers, are just dying off and moving on. The vaccine believers are dying off. The people that were indoctrinated with all the psyops that were produced on the TV are dying off. So we have a whole new generation that is way more scattered, less concentrated, and will need much more evidence to be pushed around. So, like I said, I'm pretty optimistic. I really don't know, if I was running the whole thing, what I would do next. I don't think many things are really working. So I'm pretty optimistic. Humans are very resilient, I think.
Yeah, but of course the technology, I think, in certain degree destroyed some human beings. That, you know, when you look at the attention span and the lack of calmness in people, this technology that we are given, these smartphones and stuff, also made humans more, you know, anxious and stuff. So I don't know if many young people will be capable of going, you know, through the evidence if they you know, somehow feel that maybe the presentation on the TV is BS, you know, whether they have the mental capability to look deeper into stuff. I don't know that.
Yeah, I don't know how smart people are today. I know that anyone that wants to find out anything, any question, they have the answer in their hand right now. I think that we've never had this power before. It's just awesome. Like, even if I'm sitting at the dinner table discussing, if I want to know a word that I'm not sure of, a concept, I can get the answer in 60 seconds. So we've never had this powerful tool in our hands before. So it is pretty awesome. And just the fact that we're talking from one side of the world to the other, and we're both thinking in the same way, where we could never do this before in any way. It would be impossible to know of each other's existence and coordinate. We have the tools. We just have to explain how to use them to more and more people. And I think my favorite people that I like to listen to are just the most amateur people out there, whether they be young or old. I really like it when somebody is giving their thoughts and interests and theories, and they're completely amateur at it. They're not backed by anyone. They're not part of any network. They're just one single voice that are putting their ideas out there, like you are, and many others. To me, it's fantastic. It would have never happened a long time ago before this technology.
Okay, thanks. We will end this podcast on this optimistic note.
Yeah.
I want to thank you for coming. I want to talk to you when I conclude this recording for a minute. I have to be sure that I have all the links, But to the audience, I would like to say thank you for listening to this, and thank you, Tim, for coming to this podcast and talking to some random guy from Poland who wanted to talk to you. You've been very nice. And I love what you do on your website and the Fake Kotupa. I visit every day to check what are you putting there. So thanks for what you do.
I appreciate that.
In the description. And I think you've doing a great job, and keep it up. And I like your optimism, even though I'm not so optimistic. I like it. I like what you're saying. Thanks, man. So.
Well, I thank you. Thank you back. And I thank you for doing what you're doing in your neck of the woods. I'm sure you're the smartest person when it comes to media fakery in Gdansk. And that's something to be proud of and excited about. And hopefully just people can recognize what you're doing, and recognize that there's probably others in your region that can really learn from you. And if you did your, even if maybe, I don't know if you do your podcast in Polish as well, but we definitely need representation with every language in every corner of the world. So just keep it up too. And I encourage you to just keep trying and keep promoting, as difficult as it may seem.
Yeah, thanks, man. Mm-hmm. Thanks everybody for listening. So this was the official recording.
Okay.
And I just wanted to ask you, the fakeologies.com and fakeotube, is that enough if I put it in the description, whether, or you have some other links that you want me to?
No, that's enough. Fakeologist.com is my main webpage. Napoleon wants to know if there's any links to your website. Do you have any presence on the internet that you can give for people to go look at?
Other than Beach Shoot Odyssey and my Spotify for Podcasters account, I don't have any. I destroyed my Facebook account. I don't have any social media. I wanted to have some time off of the social media. I was tired of using that.
What's your link on BitChute? You're Reality Skeptic. Okay, I think I already found it here. Let me look at it here.
So yeah. Welcome everybody to this another episode.
There it is. Oh, I didn't even subscribe to it yet. Okay, now I'm subscribed to it. And now I have to go. I don't know if you know about settings in BitChute. If you don't go to the communication tab, then you won't get any notifications. It's kind of stupid they've done. You got to check everything manually. I have all these websites that all these channels on BitChute I'm subscribed to that I don't get any notifications. So I just eventually go click through most of them. Most of them I don't even remember. So I'm going to put a link to Reality Skeptic here in my show notes. And I'm still broadcasting, by the way, just so you know. So
welcome.
Don't say anything you'd be ashamed of.
Yeah, I saw that you put my interview with Phil on your channel.
Oh yeah, because I'm a huge Phil fan. I'm a huge Phil fan. So I think I put on
genuine guy.
I think I put it on FakeOTube, didn't I?
Yeah.
So there you go. Yeah. I'm gonna put a show note number 2 on today's show, Reality Skeptic. You interviewed Armin Rigra. I talked to him 10 years ago, him and his lovely wife. I forgot her name. And they used to come on my audio chats all the time. And he's extremely deep person.
Yeah.
Isn't he? How did you choose him as your first guest?
Well, because, I wanted to talk from Europe, a guy from Europe, and he's from Portugal, and I, by accident discovered him, and it was a funny story, and I heard him on the Theo Ozman show, and this guy is so well spoken, have so great ideas. I just emailed him, and after some time he emailed me back, and he was so appreciative of that I try to do this podcast, and I don't know, somehow it happened. I cannot even explain that.
Yeah, isn't it fun when you meet somebody new, and there's just so many people out there that know what they're talking about. It's just fun. He's way smarter than me. I can't follow half his stuff, but he's a very good talker. He's Portuguese, but he speaks perfect English.
Yeah.
And
my English is a little bit, bad. It's worse than 5 years ago.
Oh, is it? Oh, your English is great. I know it's better than my Polish, so I understand Polish. You perfectly. I try, when I'm speaking to someone where English is not their first language, I try not to use too many big words. I always love using big words. I think most English people don't understand many big words, but I speak a little less sophisticated when I know English is not your first language, because I know for sure if you said some big Polish words, there's no way I'd figure it out. So of course I don't know any Polish at all. So
the problem that I have with it is, choosing words when I speak, I have all these ideas what I wanted to say, and then I cannot find the vocabulary, that's my problem, obviously. But
well, I'm sure you can say them in Polish though, that's the thing.
I don't know. Maybe I will try to do a solo podcast in Polish, or maybe, you know, there's not many people in Poland I want to talk about. I am so a little, no, maybe not so, but a little bit disgusted with the Polish people when it comes to, they are still stuck mentally with this, you know, ideas and this Russian thing. And
well, how many people are in Poland? Let's look it up. Wiki Poland.
I think officially like 37 or 38 million, something like that. Maybe
38 million. So it's the same size as Canada population wise. So based on my own statistics, most of my traffic comes from the United States. So if I'm talking to anyone, I'm talking to Americans. There's supposed to be 330 million Americans, although I'm not sure that number is correct, because it's been like that for at least 20 or 30 years, which is very strange. But they say there's over 330 million. But when I look at my statistics, I get mostly Americans, then people from the United Kingdom, and then Australia, which has about the same population as Poland and the same population as Canada. And then maybe Canada or maybe Sweden. It really, Canada is not always fourth place for my statistics, which is really disappointing. So Canadians are just, maybe it's because they're so diverse. There's so many different populations in Canada that are not really old generation Canadians, I want to say. For instance, our largest cohort of young people are probably from the Punjab, India. And we have large Chinese populations. I don't know if they're into this kind of topic. So this is one of the issues with Canada. It's such a broken, I would say it's such a society full of different groups. We have similar values, but when it comes to what they do in their spare time, they mostly probably spend time within their own culture. There is no Canadian culture per se. So it's really hard for me as a third or fourth generation Canadian to have my sort of, I would say, old school thoughts make it through to new Canadians that just are still just trying to establish themselves in Canada. So it's a more diverse crew is what I'm saying. So my audience might be even smaller than 38 million because of there's so many subsections of Canada. Whereas Poland, I'm guessing you have more of a homogenous society. Yeah. Most people are probably Roman Catholic. Most people probably speak Polish first. And whereas, like I said, we have a lot of Punjabis. Their first language is Punjabi. So it's English second. You know, so if you could get popular in Poland, your audience would probably be a lot bigger, because at least everyone speaks the same language and probably has the same religion and probably hates the Ruskies as much as the next guy.
Yeah, but when I speak to some of my friends who are semi-awake, I would say they are still stuck in this, you know, mentality that those events are real, and nobody questions the fakeness, and the most popular alternative channels, they, even when I speak against, you know, the mandates when the COVID era, they're still stuck in this mode that there are dangerous viruses, and there are not. I haven't found any fakeologists or auto hoaxers or whatever you want to call these people. I haven't found any in Poland. I don't know. Maybe I don't know how to find them, but I haven't found anyone.
What's the biggest psyop that ever happened in Poland? I think
probably Smolensk.
See, I was going to say that. The Smolensk. Have you looked into that? Do you think it was real?
No, I don't think it was real.
I'm glad to hear you say that. Where is the best research into Smolensk?
Well, it was some years ago. I didn't come back to this topic, but I know there was a Polish Canadian who did that. That was the one thing I was focused a few years ago. there was this Canadian guy of Polish descent who was doing his report on whether the plane could hit the trees, and he was some kind of an expert on the, I think it's even some woman put it on your forums. I think I remember that someone called Rachel, I think.
Rachel? Rachel's in the audience right now. Rachel, speak up.
I think she puts that even in this, in her topic about Smolensk and stuff regarding, I think, pandemics. I found it. I mean, I previously know about this guy, but I think I when I was searching your forum, I found it again. This interview with this guy when he did the report on how the mainstream and alternative narratives couldn't be possible, and I think she also post many other things about Smolensk, and I actually did, that was what I was thinking before I discovered even your forums, that there's no way that you have this plane who hit some tree and then it's, you know, that was impossible. But I think, you know, what you already know, it was probably fake, you know, from start to beginning, from start to end.
Yeah, you're right. I don't always get every post on my own forums because I'm so distracted with everything else. But yes, she did create a post under the topic, anyone know any ex-truthers? So I'm going to put a link to that in the show notes. And the other good place that there was research is on the Cruise Forum, where they talked about it. And there's a lot of strangeness around the whole thing, not the least of which is the fact that the Polish president at the time were identical twins.
Oh yeah.
And that's a really great psychological, those are really spooky characters. Anytime you have identical twins, they're almost always used in some way for some kind of psychological operation, because they can be swapped out really easily and nobody can figure out who's who. Even their own parents, I know, with identical twins have problems with their own children. Sometimes they can be fooled.
Yeah. But yeah, there is also there were supposedly many people died on that plane, you know, many, many ministers and so on. But all those people were connected so deeply into the system that you would never even, I would never even, you know, think for a second that they wouldn't be able to fake all those, you know, supposedly 80 people or whatever. I don't remember even, you know, they say 80 or 90 and people died. I don't even remember anymore. So it was like, you know, all the higher ups in military and politics and, obviously you can fake that easily, you know, so.
Well, you can't, yeah, well, there's a million, there's many ways to fake people's deaths without killing them, for sure.
Yeah, that's so true, man.
Well, that would be a good one for you to bring to your Polish audience, because obviously people would be quite interested in a local story. But other than that, I can't think of any great big Polish psychological operations, because I'm just not in your country. We don't get your media. But be sure that the people that rule over you have to use the same techniques.
Well, yeah, because obviously it's a one-world system, but I also found very suspicious that people in Poland, not many so-called truthers or alternative media don't even question, you know, the whole politics, how this guy Donald Tusk, you know, the so-called, you know, former prime minister and the president of the EU parliament.
Okay.
They don't even question that guy. That guy is, you know, hated in many circles, but he's such a fake and phony character, and people don't even question his story and, you know, his whole fake background. And you know, if people don't question even that, then, you know, sometimes I don't have much optimism as you have for people waking up, because, you know, I think all his past is manufactured. You know, there were so-called, you know, journalists in Poland, more alt, who are doing background check on that guy, his history, and all it seems manufactured. And the guy is so phony, some fake history about this guy. And he was obviously the guy who was greeted by Putin after Smolensk. And so,
oh, wow.
That character is more suspicious even than the Kaczynski brothers, you know. So,
all right.
There's a whole story there.
Duda is your president. Andrzej Duda.
Andrzej Duda, yes.
And Mateusz Morawiecki. He is the crime sinister. Interesting.
Obviously, puppets, you know, Morawiecki is just a puppet of the bankers. You know, he supposedly got a job in the bank, even though he didn't have education in banking. And there is all those stories about those prime ministers and presidents. They, if you look at the past, what they supposedly, what university they have finished and stuff like that, it's all just seems like such a stretch and fake. Even in Moikwesi's story,
is Gdansk in the West Pomeranian state, are they called states?
Voivodeship. No, it's Pomeranian, I think. And
You're in Pomeranian. Pomeranian. Okay.
Yeah, southwest from Gdansk, actually. But
I see. Right. Gdansk is the capital city of Pomeranian.
Yeah. So I'm that region, you know.
We have a lot of. We had a lot of Poles come to Canada 25 years ago. I'm gonna say, and almost all of them have moved back to Poland. They've left Canada. One of my Polish friends I've known for 30 years, he just went back. So he left Canada, he sold his house, and he
told you why?
Yeah, he had to go look after his parents. I don't think they wanted to come here. But he had a pretty big house here. I think he sold it for over $1 million and moved back to I don't know where exactly in Poland, but he lives in I don't know if he could even find an apartment, but he has a small apartment, and he likes the 15-minute city that he lives in because he can walk to the market. It's just a total different culture than over here where we are based on the car over here. So he actually really likes it. You know, he's obviously born in Poland. So, but I just found it interesting that all the Poles that were over here have pretty much moved back. They've left Canada. So obviously they have great hope for Poland and not as much for Canada, especially for their children, which is quite interesting and depressing at the same time because they're all smart people. So obviously they know something, or they just don't see the future for their own children here in Canada.
Yeah, there is obviously this idea that if there is going to be, you know, greater fall, is going to be, you know, the United States and maybe Canada and countries like that. I mean, I think some people are in Poland convinced that Poland is in the place here in Central Europe, and it's situated like that it will somehow, you know, survive the crisis on the West and is not on the East. So it's placed in a very good place and very strong, you know, situation, and people like Polish currency that it never went to euro, and I don't know, people think like that. I don't know if that's true. I don't know. I just live here because I was born here, so I never moved to another country. I mean, I traveled across Europe, but I never, you know, moved anywhere to live in a different country, so I don't know.
Yeah. It's funny. I'm just looking at FakeoTube chat. Rachel put a link to the Fakeologist forums topic, Smolensk plane crash 2010. And I just want to say here that it's kind of funny here. I'm looking at the timestamps here in the FakeoTube chat. It's interesting because I think it's 9:30, 21:29 in the United Kingdom. I think that's right. And then Lost Spider Phallus is in California, and it says it's 14:10 when he put the post in. So it's kind of funny because it's 16:30 here. So it's kind of strange. I'm trying to figure out FakeoTube's timestamps because he changed it. The FakeoTube software is very very constantly changing. It's keeping me kind of off my game here. But anyway, that's something interesting. So thank you very much for putting that in the chat, the FakoTube chat. So FakoTube is working well. I'm very happy to see that. And we can just quickly look over on YouTube and see who's talking in there. Napoleon Wilson, hello. Lily Bell is half Polish, she said. Well, which half is Polish? she says, I'd love to travel in Poland. Would be my dream destination. Well, it would be even better if you went over with a FakoTube, or sorry, a Fakeologist tour guide there. And we have Don't Be a Dog's Body in the FakoTube or the YouTube chat. We have Hillman Avenger. He's in the, or he or she's in the D Live. And yeah, lots of people listening in at this very strange hour, because I usually do not do a broadcast on Sundays at all. I'm usually too tired, but it's the only way we can meet up with our friends in Europe. Or in, I was supposed to do a podcast with a guy named, what's his name? Germ Warfare. He's in Cape Town, South Africa, and he's also way ahead of us in the time zones. And mm-hmm. Sunday is the only time I could possibly talk to him, because every other time is the wrong time. And next Sunday, so everyone knows, I have booked at fakeologist.com/live. If you go there, you will see that I have Joseph Atwell. He is going to come in next Sunday at 4:30 p.m., 16:30 Eastern. And he's in California there, and he's going to talk about Caesar's Messiah and also who he thinks is running the world. And that'll be interesting. So that'll be another Sunday show. So I don't usually do a show on Sunday. So, yeah, this was pretty interesting. We've been going for about an hour and a half on my end. So I think we could probably wrap it up. Wait, I got a thing here. Links to the blog. Yeah, if you want links to Reality Skeptic, just go to my post. This is FAK789, and I've put a link to his BitChute channel. And if you go to your BitChute channel, do you have other links to your other stuff?
It should be there.
Oh, okay.
Many, actually, because I don't know. I didn't know when I started, a month ago, whether I'm going to, do many podcasts, whether I'm going to, try to do something else. Maybe I still have no idea how far I will take this. So.
Okay, well, keep it up. It's good to see. And I see. Here's the links under About. So you got Odyssey, Spotify, and a YouTube channel. So that's
I only post short fragments on YouTube for obvious reasons. So I think I even tried to talk to post comments on Les Luthor thing channel, and I was apparently blocked by YouTube. So I don't know what happened and what is the problem, but I tried to contact the guy, and I was posting under his videos, and somehow I no, I don't know if I'm shadow banned or something. I cannot see even my posts.
Well, he might have approval on his comments. I'm a patron of his, and I spend $9 a month to listen to him, and he doesn't even answer most of my Patreon direct messages. So I couldn't find his email address. I always prefer email, like you do.
That's what I wanted. I wanted him on my show, and I couldn't find the email, so I tried to contact him on YouTube, and I cannot even.
Well, maybe leave him a message on Twitter. Just send him a message there if you can, or a comment or something. Because if you get him on your show, tell him to come back on my show, because last time he had a terrible connection, and it was making me crazy, so we had to kind of cut it. But he does do other shows on pay services, which I'm totally against, because even for me, even though I pay, it's just a nuisance trying to watch the video or get the audio. And as you know, I'm against pay services.
Yeah.
Because they're just too difficult for the average person to try and get the to play it on their phone or some other time. You have to be, you're stuck on that platform. So yeah, we do value for value here. So anyway, yeah. Well, we'll wrap it up here. You got any closing comments for my broadcast?
Well, I want to thank everybody who is contributing to your site. Even though I don't, you know, usually spend time in comments or in chats and stuff like that. I you know, that I don't like to, you know, post many stuff anywhere, but I value people who do it and who spend time to do it. So thanks for that for everybody.
Okay, perfect. Well, I'll wrap mine up with my closing music because I'm tired now. I'm not going to be able to get in to my normal stuff today because an hour and a half is enough. I was on an audio chat this morning. Are you on our audio chat platform, on our Discord platform? Do you have any interest in that?
I will think about it. I'm not present, you know. I just, you know, last month I am spending more time outside, not in front of my computer.
Smart.
So that's what I try to do. So the less time I spend in front of my computer, the better I feel. So I don't know. Maybe I will visit your Discord.
Yeah, well, in the evening when it's dark and cold out, you're way north in Poland. It's probably, the sun probably goes down at 4:30 in the afternoon at this time, no?
Yeah, but I must tell you that I absolutely love winter and I like night walks, so that's what I do at night.
Oh, you like that cold, crunchy sound under your boots when you're walking down the path, huh?
I actually prefer winter than summer, so that's, I'm one of those strange people.
Yeah, well, my wife's the same way. She hates the heat. She hates the heat. She says when you're hot, you can't do anything about it. But when you're cold, you just put on another jacket or another sweater.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she's in this. That's why we're stuck here in Canada. We're probably not going to go any farther south. She likes the cold, too. So, yeah, well, that's cool. And, well, the Discord is where we do audio chats. They're very informal chats, and it's usually the same people all the time, which is too bad because it would be nice if different people talk, but that's usually how humans work. It's always the same people that do the participating and the others that are in the background. But if you want to join in, it's free, fake11.com/Discord. And make sure, if you want to contact Reality Skeptic, go to his BitChute page. His email address is up there. And encourage him to keep going. And you can come to my Fakeologist donate page if you want and to send a donation. I see Lost Spider Phallus. You just came in with a whopping 77.77. So thank you so much, Mr. Lost Spider Phallus. You're extremely generous. And I really appreciate it. We did set up the text messaging for you so you could come and you followed through. So yeah, you pay whatever you think this site is worth. Some people think it's worth 77, some people think it's worth a dollar, and that's great. Whatever you think it's worth is really welcome. So thank you guys for donating, really appreciate it. And thanks for participating in the forums and the comments and the Discord. And Reality Skeptic, thanks for inviting me on. I look forward to posting it.
Thanks. It was great. Thanks for your time.
And do you want to stay online after I wrap this up?
Yeah, just one more thing. Technically speaking.
Technical? Okay. Yeah. I'll just wrap this up and say goodnight to everyone. And we should see you tomorrow, Monday. Maybe. I work late tomorrow, so might not make it home in time, but we'll see. Anyway, thanks everyone for joining, and have a great rest of the day. Take care.